Hello and welcome to Gin and Spooks. I'm Laura.
I'm Emma.
And what are we talking about today, Emma?
Kids that kill.
I think now is probably a good moment to say that we talk about some topics in this episode that people might find disturbing.
Discretion is advised.
Yes.
Please do not listen to this podcast if you feel very uncomfortable with kids killing other kids or other people in general.
Yeah.
Graphic content.
Yeah. On that bombshell, what are you drinking today, Emma?
I am drinking a raspberry and elderflower Tom Collins.
Yeah.
Which is actually really, really fucking nice. I'm going to be so drunk.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
I'm drinking the same. I don't know why I asked you what you were specifically drinking, because we've actually aligned with our cocktail this week.
I was trying to think of a cheap alternative because I was like, okay, I'm so poor already. And I've got another festival and another event to go to.
Yeah. I liked it because I've literally not had to buy anything for it.
I only had to buy tonic water and cordial.
Yeah.
A lot better to drink if you use actual raspberry gin.
Yeah, I did not have any.
I've still got raspberries. Have you?
Yeah.
I've still got like loads of stuff for the holy water one.
I've got a little bottle of holy water in my fridge. Because you know how I pre-made that huge batch?
Yeah.
I didn't drink it all, so I've got a little bottle of it left in the fridge, you know, just in case the demons come.
The power of Christ. I was meant to say, the power of Christ compels you, and I went, cool.
You were like, the power of Christ can Christ you.
Look, I'm not drunk yet. This is just me on a normal level.
Do you have any facts, or do you just have a story this week? Because I've just got a story.
I have two stories.
Cool.
I have one that is relatively nice on the ears.
Okay.
And one that may not be.
Okay. Do you want to do your nice one first?
Okay. So my first one is about Lyle and Eric Menendez. So Joseph Lyle Menendez and Eric Galen Menendez are American brothers who were convicted in 1996 for the murders of their parents, Jose and Mary Menendez. I don't know. I had to emphasize on. I always say not today, Jose, instead of not today, Satan.
Not today.
It's like, no way, Jose. And it's like, not today, Satan combined. So we're going, not today, Jose.
No way, Satan.
And then Scott was like, who the fuck is Jose? And I was like, it's a saying, isn't it? And he was like, no, I'm pretty sure it's not today, Satan. I went, well, I've just made a new one.
Yep. Not today, Jose. No way, Satan.
Anywho. During the trial, the brothers stated that they committed the murders in fear that the father would kill them after they threatened to expose him to years of sexual and emotional abuse. While the prosecution argued that they did it to inherit their father's multi-million dollar estate.
Oh.
They were first tried separately, with one jury for each brother. Both juries deadlocked, which resulted in a mistrial. For the second trial, they were tried together by a single jury, which found them guilty, and as a result, they were sentenced to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole.
Oh.
On the evening of August 20th, 1989, Jose and Kitty were sitting on a couch in the den of their house in Beverly Hills when Lyle and Eric entered the den carrying
Beverly
shotguns.
Beverly Hills, that's where I wanna be. Living in Beverly Hills. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
Jose was shot in the back of the head with a Mossberg 12 gauge shotgun. Kitty was awakened by the shots and got up from the couch. She was shot several times in the arm, chest, and face, leaving her unrecognizable.
Mm.
When they returned home later that night, Lyle called 911 and shouted, "Someone killed my parents." When officers from the Beverly Hills Police Department arrived, the brothers told them that the murders occurred while they were out at a movie theater seeing Batman.
Batman.
Legit.
How old were they at this point?
I think they were like in their like late teens, early 20s.
Yeah.
Like university age.
Oh, okay.
And then they attended the annual Taste of LA festival at the Santa Monica Civic Auditorium. The police did not order the brothers to undergo gunshot residue tests to find out whether they recently used a firearm. Since that time, there was no clear evidence that suggested they might be involved. In the months after the murders, the police connected the brothers' lavish spending to the murders of their parents.
Ooh.
Lyle brought a Rolex watch, a Porsche, and Chuck's Spring Street Cafe. a buffalo wing restaurant in Princeton, New Jersey, while Eric hired a full-time tennis coach and competed in a series of tournaments in Israel. He eventually left the family mansion unoccupied as they decided to live in adjoining condos in nearby Marina del Rey. They also drove around Los Angeles in the deceased mother's Mercedes-Benz convertible, dined expensively, and went on overseas trips to the Caribbean and London. It is believed that they spent somewhere around $700,000 during the period between the murders and the arrests. However, the suspicion on the brothers for this spending was later refuted by family members, stating that there were no changes with their spendings before and after the killings. During the early stages of the investigation, the police tried to narrow their search to people who had motives to kill Jose and Kitty. They also investigated potential mob leads, but nothing came of them. As the investigation continued, the police believed that the brothers were most likely perpetrators since they had obvious financial motives and were liberally spending money in the wake of the murders. In an attempt to get a confession from Eric, the police convinced Craig Signorelli, one of Eric's close friends from high school and a tennis buddy, to wear a wire while having lunch with him at a local beachfront restaurant. When Craig asked if Eric killed his parents, Eric said no, but he eventually confessed to doing so to his psychologist, Jerome Oziel. Oziel then told his mistress about the murders. She later broke up with Oziel and told the police about the brothers' involvement. Lyle was arrested in March 8, 1990, and Eric turned himself in 3 days later after returning to Los Angeles from Israel. Both were held without bail and separated from each other.
So was that psychologist not going to tell the police?
No, from the looks of it. His mistress was like, nah, that's bullshit, mate.
Yeah. I mean, I know there's an element of, as a psychologist, patient confidentiality. But when your patient is not already locked up and you're not like a prison psychologist, if your patient tells you that they're the one that murdered, would you not tell the authorities? I'm sure that's well within your rights as a psychologist.
So that got brought up. The fact that he obviously found out and didn't say anything. So in August 1990, Judge James Albrecht stated that tapes of the conversations between Eric and Oziel were inadmissible evidence, since Oziel alleged that Lyle threatened him and violated doctor-patient privilege. Albrecht's ruling was appealed and the proceedings were then delayed for 2 years. The Supreme Court of California ruled in August 1992 that most of these tapes were admissible, excepting the tape in which Eric discussed the murders. After that decision, a Los Angeles County grand jury issued indictments in December 1992, charging the brothers with murders of their parents. So they almost got away with it.
Yeah, but obviously, one of them felt too guilty.
Yeah, her name's like really weird as well. So I was like reading it and I was like, I don't know what her fucking name is. We'll just call her the mistress.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's a nice clean one for now.
Yeah.
But they almost got away with it because of like a lot of he said, she said kind of bullshit.
Yeah. I guess it's one person's word against another's and sometimes you can't really go on that, can you?
And because they were like, they had done it together and they were both in cahoots with it, obviously they would only feel like they could speak about it if one person gave like the signal that it was okay.
Yeah,
you always have the dynamics, don't you, where if it's like a partner in crime kind of thing, you've always got the one that's more dominant, I guess,
than the other.
I think Eric was the younger one, which is why he probably turned himself in, because once obviously Lyle got caught and was like arrested, Eric obviously felt obliged that he had to go down with him, I guess.
Yeah. But then it was Lyle the one that told his psychologist. Maybe I would argue that he's the less dominant one because he obviously felt guilty and cracked under the pressure of feeling guilty and had to tell someone. Whereas Eric was like, oh, look at me playing tennis.
I don't think they like are as guilty as like what they could have been, because they were going around like spending shit tons of money. But then obviously they couldn't determine if that was because they happen to like gain all this inheritance or it's just like something that they always did. But it does show that obviously the police are like a bit useless.
Yeah.
But then what can you expect in the late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah, in America.
Yeah.
So, the girl I'm going to talk about is called Mary Bell.
On a scale of like 1 to like proper fucked up, how fucked up is she?
I'd say near an 8 and 9.
Fucking hell, I'm all right. We're in for a treat. We're in for a rough ride.
Yeah. What would you put, the story you've just told about those brothers, where would you put them on a scale of 1 to 10?
4.
Yeah, then Mary's probably an 8 or a 9.
I don't particularly think that dying by shotgun is nice.
No.
However, it's a bit tame.
Yeah. So Mary Bell.
They weren't very inventive, should I say.
No, it was kind of, it's kind of the easy, almost an easy way to kill someone because you don't have to put as much thought and force behind it. You don't even have to get up close to that person, really. So Mary Bell, she was born on the 26th of May in 1957 in town or village called Corbridge, which is near Newcastle. Newcastle upon Tyne, not Newcastle local to us.
Oh, is she British?
Yes, she is British.
Okay.
From the 50s and 60s. Mary's mum was a woman called Elizabeth Bell, known as Betty. Everyone's unsure of who Mary's biological father is because Mary was already a baby when Betty married her husband, Billy Bell. So Mary was the Betty and Billy Bell. Mary was the second of her mum's children, and Betty had had Mary age 17. So bear in mind, she's 17, Mary's her second child, and then she gets married to Billy. Her mum was a well-known prostitute who regularly commuted up to Glasgow for work, leaving her kids in the care of her husband, Billy. Now, Billy was barely around, even though he's supposed to be looking after all these kids. But apparently he was violent and alcoholic, and he had a full criminal record, including things like armed robbery. Not the nicest of people to be bringing up a child.
Okay.
Did you just hear that bang?
I did, yeah.
I don't know what it was. It was a cat doing something. Anyway, so Mary had a pretty horrific childhood. When the hospital staff tried to give baby Mary to her mum screamed, "Take that thing away from me." As she was growing up, Mary frequently suffered injuries due to household accidents whilst alone with her mother. This led the rest of the family to believe it was deliberate attempts on Mary's mother's part to harm or even kill Mary. Family members offered multiple times to take custody of Mary so that her mother didn't have to look after her, but she refused every single time. Like, if you don't, she clearly did not like her kid, and the rest of her family were trying to offered to take her away. Why would you not give your kid to your family to look after?
Do you want the real answer or generic one?
Whatever you get. If you've got an answer, go for it.
Because she's a fucking psycho bitch.
So
I don't really know how to explain that. I don't know. I think some people are just like really complicated and just a bit not there, are they?
Yeah. Well, it's thought that from the age of about 4, her mum let customers sexually abuse Mary as part of her business. So I think that's the main reason why. I mean, she kept trying to kill Mary. So she dropped her from a first floor window. She pumped her full of sleeping pills, choked her. She once sold her to a mentally ill woman who couldn't have her own children. And her older sister had to travel all the way across Newcastle to get her back. So she's trying to kill this kid, but this kid is also good for business, apparently. It's just horrific.
I just go up to her and be like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Like, use protection.
Yeah. I mean, it was the 50s. I don't know.
Did he have condoms back then?
I don't know. Yeah, no. I think
just
it was...
swallow, Nan. Just do a swallow. Stop. Or just, do, you know, take it up the dirt track.
Yeah. Be sensible.
Anything but to not get pregnant. Jesus.
Yeah.
Anyway, continue.
So you know how I said that Mary's mum dropped her out a first-story window? Yes. It's thought that this caused damage to her prefrontal cortex, which is the part of the brain that helps in planning, decision-making, predicting the consequences of your actions, and impulse control.
She basically caused her daughter to be like a sociopath.
Yeah, essentially. So this is like, again, it's like, is it nature versus nurture? In this occasion, I feel like it's nurture that turned Mary into what she was, because she obviously was had a rough upbringing, and then there's actual damage to her brain, which led to issues in all the parts of your brain that help. It's almost like your conscience. So it's the part of the brain that helps with decision-making and predicting the consequences of your actions. If you're unable to predict the consequences of your actions and you've got really poor impulse control, then you're not going to quite have a full understanding of right and wrong, are you?
Exactly. And because obviously she's already in a bad family, per se. She's fucked.
So at home and school, she exhibited signs of disturbed and unpredictable behaviour. This included sudden mood swings and chronic bedwetting. She frequently fought with other children and attempted to strangle classmates. On one occasion, she tried to block the trachea of a young girl by shoving sand down her throat. This made other kids reluctant to play with her, so she didn't really have any friends. Her classmates became used to her sudden behavioural changes and could tell when she was about to flip, because she would start showing distressed behaviour, such as shaking her head, and she'd stare intensely at the person she was about to attack. Imagine being in primary school and knowing when one of your classmates is about to flip.
That's like, from obviously Mary's perspective, it's completely understandable because obviously what her mum has done to her and the fact that like she's picked up those traits, like, you know, with the trying to choke someone with sand.
Yeah.
Because her mum tried to choke her.
Yeah, she did.
So she's just like reflecting.
Yeah.
What happened to her onto other people. And in a way, that's a very bizarre and twisted way to, like, communicate with someone.
Yeah.
I guess.
She did have one friend, a girl called Norma Joyce Bell. Norma was Mary's next-door neighbour, and she was 3 years older than Mary. So they both got the same last name, Bell, but they're not related. So the initial assaults, this is where Mary starts acting up. I feel like acting up is kind of... does not really do justice to what she did. Anyway, so
I'm ready.
A 3-year-old boy was found wandering, dazed and bleeding around the vicinity of St. Margaret's Road. He told the police he had been playing on top of a disused air raid shelter with Mary and Norma when one of them had pushed him off. So it's approximately a 7-foot drop, which gave him the huge cut on his head. That same day, the parents of 3 small girls contacted the police to complain that Mary and Norma had attempted to strangle their children whilst playing in a sand pit. So Norma told the police at this point that Mary went to one of the girls and said, "What happens if you choke someone? Do they die?" Then Mary put both hands around the girl's throat and squeezed. The girl started to go purple. I told Mary to stop, but she wouldn't. So, you know how we were saying shotguns are relatively not easy way to kill someone, but it involves a lot less conscience. Mary's like, what, 10 here, and she's already strangling. She pushed a toddler off something and she's strangling girls until they go purple. So that evening, the police questioned the girls about both incidents. They denied having anything to do with the air raid shelter, saying that they had found the boy already bleeding. When asked about the girls, Mary denied any knowledge of the incident. However, Norma admitted Mary had tried to throttle each of the girls. Police notified the local authorities of the incident and of Mary's violent nature, but because of the girl's age, they were simply given a warning. In the 1960s, Newcastle upon Tyne had a bit of a, well, I say a bit, it was a significant urban renewal project. So a lot of the old Victorian era terraced slums were demolished to make way for more modern flats and new houses. A lot of these houses were left derelict, ready to be demolished, and kids would play in these houses and in the rubble and wasteland surrounding them. There was like an area that was parallel to St. Margaret's Road where Mary and that lived, and they called it Tin Lizzie, and it's basically just one of these huge wastelands with loads of derelict houses and rubble. It was also near a railway line, and a lot of the kids would love to, like, played around there.
Yeah.
So on May the 25th in 1968, which is the day before Mary's 11th birthday, she strangled 4-year-old Martin Brown in an upstairs bedroom of a derelict home on St. Mary's Road. It's believed she did this alone. Martin's body was discovered at 3:30 p.m. by some other children who raised the alarm. He was lying on his back with his arms above his head, and there were no visible signs of violence other than blood and foam around his mouth. A local workman arrived and tried to do CPR, but the boy was already dead. As he attempted CPR, Norma and Mary appeared in the doorway to watch. They were quickly shooed out of the house and went straight around to Martin's aunt's house to tell her that one of her nephews has had an accident, but they weren't sure if it was Martin as there was a lot of blood, so they couldn't tell. A post-mortem the next day was unable to determine the cause of death as there were no obvious signs of violence. The investigators believed it was poisoning through tablets, but the doctor disproved this. And basically, it was left as an open verdict. So they thought the death was suspicious, but they were unable to release, to reach any conclusive verdict.
Okay.
So on Mary's 11th birthday, her and Norma broke into a little nursery in the nearby area. They tore books, turned over desks, smeared ink and paint all over the property. The following day, the staff discovered the break-in and vandalism and notified the police. They also found four separate notes which mentioned Martin Brown's murder and took responsibility for it. So I have what the notes say here. There are some spelling mistakes, but I'm just going to read them as normal English.
Okay.
So the first one said, "I murder so that I may come back." That's proper creepy shit.
Say that one again.
"I murder so that I may come back." It reminds me of, is it Night Stalker or someone that really liked that book, and they're like, the more people you murder, the more...
Oh, Zodiac.
Zodiac.
With, fuck, what is it now?
Paradise? Some book.
The Most Dangerous Animal or something.
Yeah.
Something along those lines, yeah.
Yeah. It made me think of that a bit, because he was killing so that the more people he killed, the more slaves he would have in the afterlife or something. And just,
yeah.
"I murder so that I may come back," made me think of that. Anyway, the next one is, "We did murder Martin Brown. Fuck off, you bastard." Yeah. Now, I'm about to use some language that is horrendous.
Okay.
Fuck off. It's not even the C word. I quite like the C word. It's not. So, fuck off. "We murder. Watch out, Fanny and faggot." I just don't like the word faggot.
It's not a very nice word at all. But
yeah. And then the last one. You are mice. Why? Because we murdered Martin. Go Brown. You better look out. There are murders about by Fanny and old faggot, you screws.
Wow.
Yeah. So the police dismissed this as a tasteless and childish prank. So they didn't really look into it. They just kind of thought it was kids mucking about.
Yeah.
2 days later, just before Martin's funeral, the girls knocked onto Martin's mum's house asking to see her son. When she replied, saying that they couldn't because he's dead, Mary replied, "Oh, I know he's dead. I want to see him in his coffin." Yeah. I wish people could see your face right now. You just look repulsed.
I'm just like, I don't like kids in general anyway.
No.
It's just, this could have been like avoided if they had just, if social services had just took her before her mom had done damage to her.
Well,
I mean, who's to say that could have, you know, it could have still happened anyway. Even if, like, her mum hadn't damaged her brain, but still.
Yeah, yeah. So on the 31st of July in 1968, so the same year, Mary is 11 and Norma is, I think she's 13, 14.
Okay.
So on the 31st of July 1968, three-year-old Brian Howe was seen by his parents playing in the street outside his house with one of his siblings, their dog, and Mary and Norma. When he didn't return home that evening, concerned neighbours and relatives sent out a search party. I just want to say, look, wasn't the 1960s such a different time that his parents just let him... He's 3 years old and his parents just let him play out in the street outside.
I know, yeah. It's just ridiculous. Yeah.
Different time. So the search party eventually found him at about 10 past 11 p.m. His body was stuck between two concrete blocks on the Tin Lizzy wasteland. The first policeman to arrive on scene observed that a deliberate but feeble attempt had been made to hide the body, as it was covered in clumps of grass and weeds. Bruises and scratches were obvious on the child's neck, and his lips had gone blue. A pair of broken scissors was found by his feet. So they concluded that he died of strangulation. He had been dead for approximately 7 hours before he was found, and the killer had squeezed his nostrils closed with one hand and gripped his throat with the other. There were numerous puncture wounds on his legs. Sections of his hair had been cut off. His genitals had been mutilated. A crude attempt had been made to carve the letter M into his stomach. The small amount of force used to murder him led the coroner to conclude it had been done by another child. They also found numerous grey and maroon fibres on his clothing and shoes, but none of these matched any clothes in the Howe residence and had been transferred to him from the murderer. So they've got some inkling, like they think it's going to be kids and they've got some fibres on him.
Yeah.
How horrific is that?
It just makes me angry because you just wouldn't let your like young child waltz around with like people you don't know.
Yeah.
And just go about your day. And it's upsetting because like another kid has done that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So the discovery of his body triggered a huge manhunt. There was over 100 detectives used. And over 1,200 children were interviewed, including Mary and Norma, which is a lot.
Yeah. How did she... I'm assuming she got away with it. I'm assuming they didn't realise it was her.
Well, they did.
They did realise it was her.
Yeah.
Oh, thank fuck for that. Because I was like, how is she going to evade this now?
I mean, spoiler alert. Okay. So the first interview... So obviously witnesses had told the investigators that Norma and Mary had been seen playing with Brian the day of his murder.
Yeah.
Both girls freely admitted this in their statements, but both stated that they hadn't seen him after lunchtime. They were both pretty evasive and contradictory. Norma seemed really excited, and Mary was more observant and untalkative. So the next day, they were questioned again. Mary, at this point, said that she saw a local 8-year-old playing with Brian that day. She said that he had been covered in grass as if they'd been rolling in a field, and she had seen the boy hitting Brian. She had also seen him with a small pair of scissors. And there's a quote from Mary here saying, "I saw him trying to cut a cat's tail off with the scissors, but there was something wrong with them. One leg was broken or bent." At this point, only the police knew about the scissors found at the crime scene, and the boy that she had mentioned had been at the airport on the day of the murder. So at this point, Detective Chief Inspector James Dobson believed Mary was the killer. So this is 2 days after it happened. Mary has already essentially kicked herself in by mentioning...
You know why that is, though? She took pleasure in the death.
Yeah. Well, she was trying to...
With Ted Bundy, you know, obviously because he was his own lawyer and stuff.
Yeah.
Like the reason he got caught and was sentenced to prison was because... He was saying detail, like going into details of like how, you know, the women got murdered, and he was like taking too much pleasure in it.
Yeah.
Like, literally.
Yeah.
Confessed.
She did that typical thing of, as well, of trying to blame someone else and going into so much detail about blaming someone else that the police think it is. But the person that she blamed happened to be on holiday at that point, like literally at the airport, I think, that day. Good old Norma. On the afternoon of the 4th of August, Norma wanted to confess what she knew about the murder. So she said that Mary had taken her to a spot on the Tin Lizzy and shown her Brian's body. Norma said that Mary had showed her how that she had strangled him and told her that she had enjoyed doing it. She had also gone into detail telling Norma about how she had cut the marks on his stomach with a razor blade and the broken scissors. So here, Norma's mentioned a razor blade. Norma then led the police to the crime scene to show them where the blade was hidden. A drawing by Norma showing the wounds on Brian's body also matched the ones described by the coroner. So Norma obviously was there and knew about it. The next day, police visited Mary at her home for further questioning. This time, she was notably defensive when confronted with the discrepancies in her statement and said, "You're trying to brainwash me. I will get a solicitor to get me out of this." Which made me laugh. I don't know why that made me laugh. Later that day, Norma was questioned again and gave a full statement admitting to being present whilst Mary strangled Brian. She described Mary as, she seemed to go all funny, pushing Brian into the grass and trying to strangle him. At one point, Mary said, "My hands are getting thick, take over," at which point Norma ran away, leaving Mary and Brian. So forensic examinations of the girl's clothing revealed that the fibres matched those that had been found on Brian's body and fibres that had been found on Martin Brown, who was the other kid that died. So the maroon fibre was on a skirt of Norma's, and that had not been found on the other boy. There were grey fibres from a woolen dress of Mary's that had been found on Martin and on Brian. So Brian's funeral was attended by over 200 people. Mary stood outside the household as the coffin was brought out, laughing and rubbing her hands together.
You know what? I'd drop kick her so hard. I'd like send her fucking flying. Like, yeah. It pisses me off. Like, I don't think some kids aren't particularly nice anyway. I don't think like all kids are like capable of murdering at all. I just think if I ever saw her in real life, I'd drop kick her so hard.
Yeah.
Send her fucking flying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like, fuck off.
Bitch, no. So DCI Dobson, who's the guy that realised it was Mary after she mentioned the scissors, he said at this point he knew that he had to bring her in as she would definitely do it again. Because I think he was kind of putting off her arrest a bit, but seeing her do that, he was like, no, I need to arrest her. So both Mary and Norma were formally charged. Mary's response was, that's all right by me. And Norma burst into tears and said, I'll pay you back for this, like at Mary. So obviously Mary's like, yeah, fine, whatever. And Norma's really upset by it, which you'd think is a normal reaction.
Yeah.
In the presence of an independent witness, Mary wrote a statement blaming Nora for everything and saying that she had just watched. And she also, at this point, confessed to the nursery break-in. So Mary's not trying to pin it on fucking Norma.
The audacity.
Yeah. So both girls had psychological evaluations. The psychologist said that Norma was kind of intellectually delayed, very submissive and easy to display emotion. And Mary was bright, cunning, prone to sudden mood swings. Sometimes she was willing to talk, but she often quickly became sullen and introspective and defensive. They concluded that she suffered from a psychopathic personality disorder. Her social techniques were very primitive and included manipulation, bullying, violence, and denial. Which, if that's all the love you've ever seen from your mother and stepfather, then you kind of... So both of them pleaded not guilty. Normally, kids would have a right to anonymity on account of their age, but the judge waived that right. So because of this, the media were allowed to publicise everything, including the name, age and photos of the girls, which I know they've done horrific things, but part of me can't help think that that was a really shitty thing to do.
I think in them times, like the anger around what Mary had done, and fair enough, Norma didn't really like, she participated enough, so she was a bystander to it all.
Yeah.
Like, she might have not obviously got her hands dirty, but she didn't do anything to stop it, which is like what we mentioned earlier, like with two people who are partners in crime kind of thing, there's always one that's more dominant.
Exactly.
You've always got a submissive. So obviously Norma was the submissive, but she was scared because obviously if she turned around to Mary and was just like, I don't think you should be doing this, or try to stop her, it'd be her that would die.
Yeah. So during the trial, Norma said that she'd never touched Brian. She had known about Mary's like for violence and her history of attacking children. And the two of them had quite regularly discussed attacking and killing small children. Throughout the trial, Mary blamed Norma and said she hadn't told the authorities out of fear and loyalty. Norma's mother said that several months prior to the murder of Brian, they had caught Mary trying to strangle Norma's younger sister, and her husband had had to punch Mary on the shoulder to get her to let go. The child psychologist stated that Norma's mental age was actually around 8 years and 10 months rather than 13, 14. And that although her capacity of knowing right from wrong was limited, she was capable of knowing the criminality of the acts that she was accused of committing. So even though she had limited concepts of a lot of things, she still knew what was going on was wrong.
Yeah.
So conviction, the only evidence against Norma was Mary's statements. Mary was quite clearly the more domineering of the two and showed a substantial lack of remorse. Mary was cleared of murder and convicted of manslaughter instead on the grounds of diminished responsibility. Bear in mind, she's 11, so it's diminished responsibility. She was described by the judge as dangerous and a great risk to other children. She was detained at Her Majesty's pleasure, which effectively means an indefinite sentence. So she was given an indefinite sentence for manslaughter. And Norma was acquitted of all charges, which I kind of think is fair.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was all Mary at the end. And, like, obviously Norma should have had some say. She should have stopped it. But yeah. It sounds like she had some sort of learning disability,
yeah.
Which is why it was so easy to manipulate her, because yeah. Her brain maturity isn't on the same level, whereas, like, Mary's is, like, obviously sky high.
Yeah, which is probably why, like I say, Mary only had one friend and it happened to be Norma. It's probably the only reason yeah. Norma was friends with Mary was because she didn't really know any better. Really.
Yeah.
So Mary's imprisonment, she was initially detained in a couple of remand homes, before being transferred to a secure young offenders unit, where she was the only female among approximately 24 inmates. She later claimed to have been sexually abused by staff and inmates whilst in there. In June 1976, when she was approximately 19 years old, she was transferred to Moor Court Open Prison, where she undertook a secretarial course. So Moor Court Open Prison is actually in Oakmoor, which is down the road from Alton Towers.
No way.
Yeah, so I've driven past that multiple times throughout my life and never known that it was a prison. It's not a prison anymore, and it was an open prison. But yeah, in September 1977, her and another inmate called Annette Priest escaped. They spent several days in Blackpool with a couple of young men, going on all the amusements and spending time in hotels. And then Mary was found at the Derbyshire home of one of the men that she'd run away with, and she was arrested there. She had dyed her hair blonde in an effort to disguise her identity. And she was released in May 1980, age 23, having served almost 11 and a half years. And she was granted anonymity, allowing her to live a normal life and to be left alone. And then in recent years, her daughter and granddaughter have all been granted anonymity for life. I think there was a moment where the police or the press found out her new identity, and yeah. Her daughter didn't know who she was. Like, her daughter didn't know that she'd been this child murderer, and the press, like, completely swarmed the house, and she got all sorts of abuse and stuff. So the courts have let her have anonymity for life now, along with her daughter and granddaughter, which, I mean, I'm kind of, like, mixed feelings about it, because I think, oh yeah, fair enough, she has the rights to a full life. But then part of me is like, actually, she did some horrendous things, so should she have been locked up for life? But then actually I'm like, but she was just a child that was never looked after properly and dropped on her head. So after serving 11 and a half years, I almost think it's fair that now she gets a second chance.
I don't know. I think she got off easy.
Oh, yeah.
During premeditated crimes on very innocent and vulnerable young kids. I know.
But she was also quite an innocent and vulnerable young kid.
Yeah.
Just a psychopathic one.
I mean, like I said, like, who's to say that she wouldn't still turn out that way, even if she hadn't been, like, abused herself?
Yeah.
Obviously, we can't say that for certain, but no, I don't think she... I think she was let off far too easy.
Yeah.
And the fact that she was charged for manslaughter and not actual murder.
Yes.
It was murder.
She admitted it to being murder in those bloody notes about Martin.
Manslaughter is like when it's completely accidental. Like, you have a fight with someone, you knock them over, they hit the head in the wrong way, they die.
Yeah.
That kind of situation. Or manslaughter is when you accidentally kill someone when you're driving or something.
Yeah.
Like, the circumstances are accidental. This was not accidental. No. And I think she got off very lightly.
Yeah.
And the fact that, like, the police officer wanted to delay a little bit in terms of, like, arresting her, again, she was getting off lightly, I don't think.
Well, he didn't in the end.
Luckily, he didn't.
But yeah.
I don't know. It's a difficult one because, obviously, you know, things happened to her, and the people that did those things to her weren't reprimanded for them. They weren't, you know, charged or put into prison. No one really made an effort to actually try and stop that from happening. But I feel like they could have done more with her. I mean, she could have reformed. She could have been completely different person now if she's still around, which she probably won't be.
I don't know. I feel like she might be.
But if I saw a kid doing that after losing my own child,
yeah,
and bringing out the coffin out of the house, and she stood there, I would drop kick her so fucking hard. I'd donkey kick her.
Yeah.
Fucking donkey punch her even.
Yeah.
Knock her the fuck out. That's what I'd do.
I feel so. Part of me feels sorry for her.
It's upsetting as well because the things that happened to her should never happen to a kid at all. No. And the fact that her mum was very obvious, and the fact that she didn't want her despite already having kids before her.
Yeah.
Like, it is upsetting. And this is why I don't agree with, like, people just having kids here and there. Like, they're going to fix things for you. They're not.
Yeah.
They're not a resolution. They're not, no. You know.
No. Yeah.
Like a plaster you can put over your problems kind of thing. Like, these are kids and what you do to your kids. If you treat it like shit, I say it, if you treat them like shit.
Yeah.
Then that's going to impact them very negatively. And people are not self-aware enough to be able to realize their own issues and their own problems.
Yeah.
To accept responsibility. A lot of people can't accept responsibility. And this is why we have child killers. This is why we have killers in general. Because people are like, it's not my problem. Like, that person wronged me. What? Yeah. So you think you're God? You can take their life away from them? Like, that's not
how it works, huns.
No. I just, like, suddenly got really passionate about this. Or I was just like,
good. It's good. It's just, You're right.
I don't dislike kids to the point where, like, I don't think anyone should have kids. I just think that people need to realize that they're not perfect.
Yeah.
And kids are not the answer. They're not a solution to, you know, all your problems. They take time and education and money and,
change your life completely. You're not getting a pet.
But even if when you get a pet, though, like, if you mistreat it,
And
this is where people get confused. They think, like, you know, with certain breeds of dogs, but they think they're just like a violent dog. They're not. Do you know why they're violent? Because you're violent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Animals are so good at, like, picking up personalities. Why, like, and there's certain reasons why, you know, a cat won't approach you, because it probably can sense your shitty ass personality from down the street.
Yep. Yeah, so if anyone comes to either mine or Emma's house now, if our cats don't like you, you're fucking out.
Oh, I've always said this. I was like, if I ever, like, ended up with someone, my cats do not like you, there's a reason why they don't like you. So,
yeah,
jog on me.
Hey, I sat on one of your cats and he still slept with me. Oh, my God. Speaking of cats, this one's just jumped onto my keyboard.
Oh, look how tiny she is. She's like, no, Mom, no, let me go. You have to be so careful because kids are so impressionable. Like, they look at you as their heroes. You are the person that brought them into this world and you're treating them like shit.
Yeah.
Like, if you can't look after a kid, can't look after a pet, don't have one.
No.
There is no, but maybe, you know, all this bollocks. It's like, no. At the end of the day, if you're not financially stable, mentally stable, and, like, able to have a consistent, stable life, full stop, you should not be having any sort of responsibilities that require you looking after another human being or an animal.
No,
you
honest,
just got told. Thank you for my TED talk. Bye, bitches.
But sometimes animals can help teach people responsibility and help get them out of a poor mental state.
Yes, that's why there's been many people who, you know, have had depression and they ended up getting a puppy, and, like, the dog or the cat have helped them. Like, my cats help me with my anxiety all the time. Like, they're there, they comfort me, and I'm happy that they're there, even though one's currently passed out on the bookcase. You know, and they do make an impact. Like, they're my kids.
Yeah.
Like, I literally do anything for them. If anything happens to them, I'd start killing people.
Yeah.
Like, turn into a John Wick over here. But thank you for sharing that story.
You're welcome. The reason it piqued my interest was because it was because she was incarcerated for a bit near here. And
yeah, it's quite localised, isn't it?
Yeah. And I'm sure someone said that my granddad helped find her, but I'm not sure how true that is, or helped try to catch her.
You mean he could have done if with how close it is and
yeah,
how like central your family is to that area. So
yeah,
I've so, like drank this much.
Ooh, I've almost finished my pint. It's just kind of raspberries now.
Do you need to get another drink? My second story is about the murder of James Bulger. It's not the best story.
No.
I remember like hearing about this when I was like quite young, and for some reason it always like kind of stuck with me.
Yeah.
I think it's like how kind of horrific.
Yeah, I know the name. I think if you're from the UK, you kind of know the name, don't you?
Yeah, it's quite a well-known event that kind of happened in the early 90s.
Yeah.
So James Patrick Bulger was a 2-year-old boy from Kirkby, Merseyside, England, who was abducted, tortured and murdered by 2 10-year-old boys, Robert Thompson and John Verables, on Friday the 12th of February 1993. Thompson and Verables led Bulger away from the New Strand shopping centre in Bootle, as his mother had taken her eyes off him momentarily. His mutilated body was found on a railway line 2.5 miles away in Walton, Liverpool, 2 days after his abduction. So Thompson and Verables were charged on the 20th of February 1993 with abduction and murder. They were found guilty on the 24th of November, making them the youngest convicted murderers in modern British history.
They were actually convicted of murder, not manslaughter like Mary.
Yeah, they were like, it's a done deal. You're going down for this shit. They were sentenced to detention at Her Majesty's pleasure until a parole board decision in June 2001 recommended their release on a lifelong licence aged 18. In 2010, Verables was sent to prison for breaching the terms of his licence and was released on parole again in 2013. In November 2017, Verables was again sent to prison for possessing child abuse images on his computer.
Oh, I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, he, without like going into full like graphic detail, he basically was found like having like porn videos and images of like young children being raped.
Yeah.
By adults.
Horrific.
Yeah. So the Bulger case has prompted widespread debate about how to handle young offenders when they are sentenced or released from custody. So the murder, CCTV evidence from the New Strand shopping centre in Bootle, taken on the Friday the 2nd, the 12th of February 1993, showed Thompson and Verables casually observing children, apparently selecting the target. The boys were playing truant from school, which they did regularly, which basically meant they skip school.
Yeah.
Like most kids did around that time. Throughout the day, Thompson and Verables were seen stealing various items, including sweets, a troll doll, some batteries and a can of blue paint, some of which were later found at the murder scene.
I used to have trolls.
I think I used to have one.
Mm.
I think. One of the boys later revealed that they were planning to find a child to abduct, lead him to the busy roadside alongside the shopping centre and push him into oncoming traffic.
Oh, Christ.
That afternoon, Bulger from nearby Kirkby went with his mother to the shopping centre whilst inside the butcher shop on the lower floor of the centre around 20 to 4. Denise, who had let go of James's hand whilst paying for her shopping, realised that her son had left the shop. Thompson and Verables approached James, took him by the hand and led him out of the shopping centre. The moment was caught on CCTV at 15:42 p.m. Thompson and Verables took James to the canal around a quarter of a mile from the shopping centre, where they dropped him on his head and he suffered injuries to his face.
Oh.
The boys joked about pushing him into the canal. An eyewitness during the trial said that when he saw James at the canal, he was crying his eyes out. During a 2.5-mile walk across Liverpool, the boys were seen by 38 people, but most bystanders did nothing to intervene.
Whoa.
That pissed me off when I was writing it out. I was like, are you taking the piss?
But then you don't know why the kid's crying, though, do you?
But you'd still go up and you... I'd be like asking all sorts of questions. I'd be like, what's going on?
Yeah. Or you'd at least maybe contact the police.
You'd think that at least somebody would do that.
Yeah.
Two people challenged the boys, but they claimed James was their brother or that he was lost and they were taken into a police station. At one point, they took him into a pet shop where he eventually was kicked out. Eventually, the boys arrived in the village of Walton, and with the police station across the road facing them, they hesitated and led James up a steep bank to a railway nearby where they began torturing him.
Oh.
One of the boys threw blue modelling paint, which they had shoplifted earlier, and into James's left eye. They kicked him, stamped on him, and threw bricks and stones at him. They placed batteries in his mouth and, according to police, may have inserted some into his anus.
Oh.
Although none were found there. Finally, the boys dropped a 22-pound iron bar on James.
Oh my God.
Sustained 10 skull fractures as a result of the bar striking his head.
Oh my God.
Alan Williams, the case's pathologist, stated that he suffered so many injuries, 42 in total.
Oh my God.
That none could be isolated as the fatal blow. Thompson and Variables laid James across the rail tracks and weighted his head down with rubble in the hope that a train would hit him and make it look like an accident.
Oh.
After they left the scene, his body was cut in half by a train. James' severed body was discovered by several schoolboys 2 days later on the 14th of February. A forensic pathologist testified that he had died before he was struck by the train.
That's awful.
Police suspected that there was a sexual element to the crime since Bulger's shoes, socks, trousers and pants had been removed. The pathologist's report, which was read out in court, found that his foreskin was forcibly pulled back. When Thompson and Variables were questioned about the aspect of the attack by the police, the pair were reluctant to give details and also denied inserting batteries into Bulger's anus. At the eventual parole, Variables' psychiatrist Susan Bailey reported that visiting and revisiting the issue with John as a child and now as an adolescent, he gives no account of any sexual element to the offence.
It's all so fucked up.
I just can't believe that many people just saw them, carried on. Like, how ignorant could you be? Like, in this day and age, obviously, it's a different matter because, we're aware of these kind of things. These things have happened now. And we've been brought up to realise that, it's not that safe for a child to just be out and about. And I know, obviously, they took him while he was, metres away from his mum.
Yeah.
Managed to coax him away. But the fact that, they didn't really do anything to stop him.
Yeah.
They're young kids themselves. So if they're turning around to you and going, yeah, he's lost, I'm like, okay, well, what did the police station with you?
Yeah, yeah, you'd walk to the police station with them, wouldn't you? If they told you they were taken to a police station, then you'd go with them.
Yeah, you'd make sure that they actually go into a police station. I won't fall for any of this bullshit. No. Unless you would turn around and be like, I'll walk with you. I'll take that time out of my day to make sure that, he gets found safe.
You'd be worried. You'd be worried about the two older boys as well, though, would you not? Away from their parents with a crying child. You'd like, I'd want to make sure all three children got to safety.
Yeah. Obviously not. Obviously no one gave a shit. So it's, a reflection on other people as well. Like, they did nothing to prevent this. Like, he could be safe now. He could be, grown up.
Yeah.
If people had just intervened a bit more instead of just accepting some bullshit story from a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
But it was horrific. But luckily, I guess some mercy out of it was that he wasn't alive at that point when the train had hit him. It was, what a fucking way to go. I mean, it was horrible anyway, but...
Yeah, yeah.
And that was 10-year-olds.
That's awful.
I couldn't really find much on, in terms of their background, obviously.
But because it's so recent, well, not that recent, 90s, almost 30 years ago now, but I bet there's more protection laws in place now.
Well, they're out now.
Well, yeah, and that. But I mean, to find out about their background and stuff.
Yeah. Well, they've got doing witness protection.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's Venables that keeps reoffending, isn't it? And it's just a disgusting human.
Yeah.
So in this situation, it feels like he's the more dominant one, and then Thompson's the.
Yeah, but it is also, I guess, again, it's a reflection on parenting, and obviously, you have to be careful and you have to make sure that, your kids know from right and wrong and what's acceptable. And going around and abducting young, innocent, vulnerable children.
Yeah.
And doing these kind of things is not a good thing.
No, not at all.
But all kids, and in fact, all killers always build up to that moment, that first kill. So You have to think, okay, are they showing signs and behaviours before they even killed someone? Like, are they abusing animals? Are they behaving in a different way?
In Mary's case, showing sand down a girl's throat and strangling people.
Yeah. Like, there's a lot of signs that children will show which can develop into, you know, bad behaviours, essentially. Yeah. But people tend to ignore it. People, like, and this is the reason why there's so many that go away, that get away with, like, literal murder.
Yeah.
Because they call the signs. Like, if you think something's dodgy and you call them out on it.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you feel safe enough and you're able to defend yourself, if it was a situation like you had to fight or whatever, call them out on it.
Yeah.
People don't like to question. They just accept it. And I think that's why so many people get away with murder.
Yeah. This has taken a serious turn. I think it's a fairly serious episode anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just really complicated to, like, pick a side, because it's not that easy to just go, oh, it's just black and white, because there's a lot of grey.
Yeah, there's a lot of different variables.
Yeah, but I do think it comes down to, like, if you're going to have kids, you need to be fully responsible of how you're going to impact that kid's life.
Yeah.
If you're not willing to raise them in the right way, you don't have the patience, or, you know, you've got your own problems. You don't have kids. It's as simple as that. You're scarring them for life when you're not accepting responsibility, or not, you know, educating them in the right way.
Yeah.
And I think people get confused.
Yeah. It almost makes me not want to have kids. One, because I'm scared of them getting kidnapped and murdered. And two, because I'm scared of them doing the kidnapping and murdering.
Yeah. It's difficult because, obviously, like, the world's a nasty place. It always has been and always will be.
Yeah.
Because people are just too accepting of it and just go, it is what it is, and don't try and change anything. And, like, for us to have, like, a safe environment for our children and, like, our children's children, we need to be taking responsibility and making some sort of difference now.
Yeah.
And it all comes down to, like, you know, with, like, the environment, global warming and, like, societal issues and government issues. Like, people are so easy to just basically lay on their back and let someone else stroke their fucking stomach like a dog.
Yeah.
We're not going to change.
No.
That's not going to make a difference. So we're just going to keep on doing the same thing over and over again until someone makes a difference. I feel like I've just started, like, a political speech there. I just feel like I'm running for presidency.
I'm the president of the world.
But, like...
But you're right. You have a point.
Yeah. I just, like, me personally, when I'm, like, surrounded by, like, my people my age or a few years older or a few years younger, and I'm very, like, I feel very in between. So I feel like most people that I know and I'm friends with, like, they get to a point in their life where they want children, or, you know, they want this and that. And that's all fine. But then I'm, like, I'm the only one that feels like I'm working through my problems and my issues sometimes, because I'm, like, oh, yeah, but it's this and this and this. And, like, you know, a journey with yourself, it's tiring.
Yeah.
But it's, like, so rewarding at the end, because then you could fully immerse yourself in a responsibility.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, that's why we've, like, waited. We've got a house now, so.
Big adult time.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not fucking perfect. There's still things that I need to work through, but I do think it makes a difference in how you view yourself and how you approach things when you're actually working through things that you have issues with.
Yep.
And I would come back to the point where, like, you shouldn't be having kids until you've reached that point, until you self-actualize.
Yes, I agree.
Have that journey with yourself. That's why people go on pilgrimages and stuff like that.
Should we go on a pilgrimage somewhere?
I feel like I've been on one this year after the fucking pandemic.
Yeah.
Just a very cheap, isolated one.
Yeah. So.
I just talked for loads of time, basically shaming everyone. So I hope no one gets offended by this.
No, but I completely agree with everything you've said. I think humans have to take more responsibility for their actions when it comes to everything.
Just a lot of people, like, and... No disrespect to anyone, and I mean, if the shoe fits, the shoe fits.
Yeah. But, not pointing any fingers, but if you think we're talking about you, then
we're probably talking about you. I just think that there's a lot of people, and it's mainly with the older generation. They're so quick to blame other people.
Yeah.
And I think that's where, and at the end of the day, like, why are you blaming that person for something that you've done?
Yeah.
I think you're an adult. You've been an adult longer than we have. And yet we seem to be more mentally matured and more grown up compared to other people. That's why I find it really difficult to understand when people, like at work, blame other people. I'm like, just take the responsibility. Yeah. At the end of the day, people are going to respect you more because you're more honest and more direct about it. Not just going, I'll bet this person, you know, said this and that. Like, who gives a fucking flying shit?
No, yeah.
Thank you for coming to my gospel.
Emma's, the gospel according to Emma.
Boom, mic drop.
I feel like this topic is too serious for us to do a would you rather question.
I was thinking that when you went to the bathroom, I was like, no way am I doing a would you rather. It's just, I know it's a very sensitive topic, and I know like people are going to be very opinionated about it. And everyone's entitled to their opinions. It's just I have to accept other people's.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like proper like ruined the mood. I was like,
no, you haven't at all. I'm just quite quiet, and I don't have any, I don't think whatever I could say will match what you've said, because I agree completely with everything you're saying. I just, whatever I say next is not going to do it the conversation justice, and my cat's just decided she does not want to be sitting on me anymore. I don't think she likes me talking.
She's like, you're disturbing my sleep, go away.
Anyway, have we got a lesson for today? I think the lesson is, be kind to other people. Don't have kids unless you're, don't deliberately have kids unless you're responsible, because I feel like there's loads of people that have kids accidentally.
Yeah.
And then there are some situations that just.
Yeah. So the lesson is, use protection.
Yeah.
Even then, you'll get pregnant and then you'll die.
All right, mean girls. Even then, though, protection can fail. This is the problem.
Yeah, I know.
Today's lesson is, abortion needs to be a safe and legal thing for everyone.
Preach.
Texas.
Legalized abortion.
Texas can go suck a fuck because of their new abortion laws. Legalize abortion. Yeah.
Legalize abortion. That will be today's lesson. I don't know why people... I know why it is. It's the patriarchy again. Sorry, guys, I'm slamming you once again, because guess what? Men ain't fucking shit.
Men ain't
but shit. I don't care. Like, why you got more control over my body than myself? I'm the one that lives my life.
You say that you are pro-life, but then once that baby is born, you don't give it free food. You don't give the parents help to raise it. You ruin that kid's life and the mother's. Anyway. Thank you for coming to our TED Talk.
Legalize abortion. Woohoo!
Do we just drop into our social medias now after that?
I guess so.
Can you believe we don't have it, this end bit pre-recorded as well? Like, come on.
I know, yeah.
Maybe we should do that one day.
We'll forget.
We will.
Okay.
So, please head over to our Instagram, which is @ginandspooks. For any photos to do with things that we have talked about today. These will also be on our blog, which is ginandspooks.wordpress.com.
If you've got any scary stories or drink suggestions of your own, you can email us at ginandspooks@gmail.com or send us a DM.
We also have Twitter, which is @ginandspookspod, and we have Facebook, which is ginandspookspodcast. So follow us on everything, come and join the party, tweet us some memes, some topic suggestions, some drink suggestions, spooky stories, everything. Until next time, stay safe and spooky.
Hey.